I'm Frank Vaughn. It's April 28th, 2025, voting day, and I don't have a whole lot to say, just a couple items. First off, tonight at 6 o'clock my time, I'm going to be doing an appearance on, I think it's either Sean Newman or Clyde Do Something. I'll be there for a half hour. There's a chance I'll be going on the National Telegraph with Wyatt Claypool and Daniel Boardman, though I'm not sure of that. But I can guarantee you this, out of it all, is that somewhere around 9 o'clock, 9:30 Eastern Standard Time and 7 o'clock and 7:30 Mountain Time, I'll be doing a live stream, and we will go until we know what the next parliament is going to look like. That much I can guarantee. So I'm going to be here. The other thing is I got up this morning. I didn't even shower. I drank my coffee with my family, and I went and voted, and I just got back from that. And I'm going to go shower and wash the last 4 years off myself, at least symbolically. And then I'll probably spend a fairly quiet afternoon killing time with the family and just enjoying life, because we are all consumed with this election and its outcome one way or another. Whether we're numb like I am or whether we're exhilarated for one party or another, it's a moment in time. It's almost like we're hung up. But meanwhile, there's another international community out there where things are happening. The headline is, Pakistan's defense chief warns military incursion by India is imminent. This is one of those stories that is completely gone by the wayside. Many years ago, I don't even remember how many. It's been a long time since I've discussed India and Pakistan, but I did some videos about Gandhi and the history of the partition and the millions of people who died during the partition and how Pakistan and India are a juxtaposition, living next door to each other, two nuclear-armed neighbors. And they're off to shooting at each other after a terrorist attack killed two or three dozen Indians. And it seems like India is going to invade, at least in a limited way. And this is one of those examples where everybody might be focused on an election, or everybody might be focused on Iran, or everybody might be focused on Syria and Israel and Turkey and the gong show that's going on there. And meanwhile, coming up the backstretch, nobody even paying attention, is this other crisis, which if it erupts, could see the world very quickly enter its first nuclear war. And I can't imagine two cultures and two societies, India and Pakistan, more equipped to be the trigger for that war. There's a lot of fatalism inherent in the culture. But because there's so many people packed together in such a small space, the opportunity for very fast escalation exists there like in no other place. And I know in my previous work many, many years ago, I highlighted how everybody could be looking in the wrong direction and the world's true first risk of nuclear war could be right there. So when we're done with our election today, regardless of the outcome, it doesn't solve all of the world's problems. It's not like the work stops domestically or internationally. We just get our marching orders in a way. We just get some clarity about what we're going to do. And further to the result, my gut instinct is that the Conservative Party is going to win. That's been my gut instinct this entire time. But whether I'm numb or not, there's some level of investment that I have in this election outcome, so it's hard for me to unilaterally trust my gut. If I was thoroughly trusting of my gut, maybe I'd take some kind of ridiculous loan and throw it on Polymarket if we can even compete. I wouldn't actually do that, but I mean, I don't have the courage and conviction to actually put money down on the market one way or another. But the truth is, that's what I feel my instinct is telling me. Now, whether it is right or not, whether the election's proper or not, it doesn't really matter because we're all stuck waiting anyway. I just can't rationally see Even if the entire left comes together to support the Liberal Party, which, again, I don't even understand that. I don't understand how, and maybe I'm just so far removed now from the liberalism of my youth that I don't understand just how thoroughly ensconced leftism is in the liberal mind, that they could turn their blinders on and support Mark Carney, the world's premier exploiter of the poor, a man who's principal representation in his entire life is his advocacy for the rich. You couldn't get a more connected oligarch, and I can't understand the left unifying around him. I understand Jagmeet Singh, who will be gone tonight. He's going to lose his seat. And I would expect a resignation from him. That would be the normal procedure. Maybe it won't happen, maybe it will. But I think we see the end of him one way or another. He's destroyed the NDP. But even at that, even with his terrible rubber stamp leadership, if you can even call it leadership, it's hard for me to imagine the NDP base unifying around a central banking oligarch who's representing the most wealthy people on the planet. It doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't make any sense to me that 10 years into this, with C-75 passed, drug addicts all over the street, violent criminals being released every single day, the police doing their job, but the justice system turning violence loose in the name of the law. I don't understand how people could support that again for another 4 years, even after Trudeau was gone, because it's not all Trudeau's fault. His MP supported him every step of the way. This government that is fighting for re-election is the same one that delivered us here. Record high deficits, record high national debt, huge inflation, failure after failure after failure after failure. It's very difficult for me to understand how this country could possibly hand them another 4 years. And this is why I don't necessarily trust my gut instinct, because I'm being reasonable. I'm being rational. Is this country a reasonable, rational place anymore? Is there enough of the public that is reasonable and rational that they'll actually get the job done? Is my instinct blinded by my reason? And that's why I can't act on that. But because the world is on a knife's edge, no matter how you cut it, no pun intended, this Pakistan-India stuff, it's not an isolated thing. I mean, if they get lobbing nukes at each other, the resulting fallout, like, there's no such thing as a limited nuclear war. When the missiles start flying, all the missiles start flying between these two. And the amount of dust they will kick up in the atmosphere and radioactive dust, it will upset every corner of the earth if it happens. But when it happens, if and when it happens, when nuclear war is actually visited upon this planet, there's no such thing as limitation. It'll be total. And I can't imagine a better place in the world than Pakistan and India to introduce the concept of total nuclear war between two nations and maybe hopefully teach us a valuable lesson about why we should get along in a multipolar world. This is a Gordian knot. You want to look around the world for flashpoints that are near impossible to think about solving and making for peaceful resolution. Oftentimes people think of Israel and Palestine and how incompatible the two are and how it seems that the only thing that can ever solve that problem is total war between one and the other and an eventual victory, which is essentially what segments of both populations preach. But I'm guilty of this flying under the radar. This is probably the most inseparable problem, the most unsolvable problem on the planet, is the existence of Pakistan and India side by side, with the population pressures both face, with the massive scale of environmental degradation, the very environment that they require to sustain billions, something like 1.6. I think Pakistan is 350 million, the entire population of the United States packed into one little country. And then India is over a billion by itself. If you watch any travel vlogs going through India, you can understand how polluted a place it is and how backwards a place it is. And they have the caste system and virtual slavery, and it's the same in Pakistan. There's people who are indentured for life there. And they possess the greatest, most horrific weapons that mankind has ever devised, implemented, and created. And they've been off to shooting at each other now for a few days. And India, Modi, has said the response will be big. It's hard to imagine how two nuclear-armed nations can directly confront one another conventionally without resorting to the usage of tactical nukes. And when the first one goes off, the rest follows suit. It's the only way to win. You have to destroy your enemy totally before they can destroy you. That's why it's called mutually assured destruction. That's what keeps the world in check and in balance. That's why NATO can't directly confront Russia, because it's a game of chicken. The only reason, the only function of nuclear weapons is to check wars between nations. And there has to be, in order to function that way, there has to be a moment in time where their usage is demanded. Who better to find that moment in time than Pakistan and India? Anyway, not to be dour, but I think you should just go and enjoy your family. If you've already voted, I think you should just relax. Wait for the live streams later. Have a good time. It's election day. Try and resist the urge to day drink. That's what I'm going to be doing for most of today. Well, not day drinking. Avoiding day drinking. I'm going to put it off for as long as I can. But I imagine that tonight I'll have a shot or two. It's one of the beauties of being 44 years old is that I actually have a stocked liquor cabinet, because I rarely ever touch it. So I've had the same bottles of booze for years. Maybe I'll get into it with you tonight. Might be a good idea. Either way, I'm Frank Vaughn. Good luck, and I'll see you later.